Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We have got a loaded Thursday edition of the program for all of you. Miranda Devine going to join us here in the first hour to talk about secret airlifts of illegal immigrants rolling into the United States. In the third hour, Jedediah Bila. Man, I'm
Jedediah Bila.
That's like one of the most complicated names out there.
I've only known her 10 years, so I've had to get her name right over the years. But it is hard. I agree.
And I'm probably going to screw this one up, too, just right off the top. Raheem Kassam, did I get that right?
You nailed that one.
All right.
And he's a fancy British guy, so you got to get his name right.
All right. So all of those are our guests. In the near future, Joe Biden is going to be appearing in the White House with Stephen Breyer to announce that Stephen Breyer is stepping down, presumably, although it hasn't been officially announced, at the end of this term in the Supreme Court, which will end at the end of June, right as summer officially begins. So there will be a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing, and there will be a nominee coming forward soon. This news broke yesterday, and Buck and I discussed the political ramifications of it. But as I think more and more about this situation, and I know the same is true for you, Buck, as I look at all of the finalists, and as I have since heard re-echoed the campaign promise that Joe Biden made that he would put a black woman on the Supreme Court if he had an opportunity to do so, Jen Psaki yesterday in the White House confirmed that Joe Biden is going to put a black woman on the Supreme Court. Here is what she said in response to a question about the potential opening. This was yesterday.
I've commented on this previously. The president has stated and reiterated his commitment to nominating a black woman to the Supreme Court and certainly stands by that. For today, again, I'm just not going to be able to say anything about any specifics until, of course, Justice Breyer makes any announcement, should he decide to make an announcement.
So, Buck, here's what jumps out to me about this, and this is me putting my lawyer hat on. If you are a lawyer, theoretically, the highest office to which you can aspire is to be sitting on the Supreme Court. I understand maybe some people want to be the Attorney General, but if you want to have a public-facing job, the Supreme Court, one of those nine seats, is the highest level of acumen in the legal profession that you could aspire to. What Joe Biden is doing here is truly unprecedented in a post-civil rights era, in the modern era that most of us have grown up in and lived in the United States. He is saying explicitly, I am not going to consider 94% of the American public for this job. He is specifically saying that the 6% of the population that is black women, and much smaller percentage of those black women that are theoretically have legal and judicial experience, are the entire list from which he will be picking his Supreme Court nominee. I think, first of all, this is everything that's wrong with the idea of affirmative action, of diversity and inclusion, of the entire process of selecting people for office, primarily for a couple of reasons here, and then I want to get what you think, Buck. First, whoever Biden selects now is going to be seen as a quota selection. That's unfair to her, because there are likely 25, 30, 45, 50 people. We know a list is substantial of people who would be eligible to be the next Supreme Court justice. Some of those people would be black women. If your list is from across the entire landscape of judicial potential nominees, then people don't look at it and say, oh, the only reason you got this job is because you're a black woman. The way that Joe Biden, Buck, has made this selection makes it such that most people are going to say that. Second, we have coming up soon a Supreme Court case dealing with the University of North Carolina and Harvard, primarily focused on Asian applicants, that is going to say, I believe, the use of race to make decisions as it pertains to college admissions is wrong. Here we have a clear quota being applied by Joe Biden. This is wrong.
You may have Joe Biden's one and only appointment to the Supreme Court on unconstitutional and illegal principles, really. And when you think about it, especially if the Supreme Court ruling is, as I think you are correct, that you can't actually make distinctions about race in admissions, in hiring, in any of these things. The whole system, and anybody who's gone to college in the last, well, probably the last 30 or 40 years, but certainly the last 20 years has seen the way this is applied, is premised upon essentially dishonesty, right? The dishonesty, and this is what goes to the heart of the Harvard case, is we have this holistic admissions process. We look at all these different factors, but that's actually not true. That's just the lie. It's kind of like saying when people are applying for, you know, a country club, and everyone says, well, hold on a second. You don't allow people of this religion or this race in your country club. They say, oh, but there are so many factors. We're not discriminating against people. Well, hold on a second. Are you or are you not? Right? I mean, you can pretend that it's all so vague and complicated, but what's the end result? The end result at places like Harvard, and name an elite school across the country, is that there are some people of certain racial backgrounds who get a substantial advantage, and this is proven in the numbers, based upon skin color. Flatly, not equal protection under the law, unconstitutional. And even the Supreme Court decision that you mentioned yesterday, Grutter v. Bollinger, I think it was Sandra Day O'Connor, right? That we won't need this in 25 years. Or was
Yeah,
Kennedy?
That's what she said.
Yeah. That's absurd. Think about a constitutional right where the Supreme Court declares there's an expiration date. And on, which is exactly what they did.
It's
and
true.
On, and that's just policy from the bench. That's just legislating from the bench. On the notion of Biden announcing this, you know, I actually, it took a little bit of processing. When remember we broke this on the air together, Clay, and then I went home and said, hold on a second. How is this? If Biden said, if he went on TV and he said, hey, you know, I've got this great property in Delaware. I'm only going to rent it out to Asian Americans because I'm upset about, you know, AAPI discrimination or whatever, right? People would say, you can't do that. That's illegal. If he said, I'm only going to hire, if you were running a company, you said, I'm only going to hire a, you know, an Asian female CEO because I want to make a, people would say that's clearly discrimination and illegal. So what's the way that they actually go about this? They say, well, we're not going to make it that explicit. We're going to have a stealth quota is what I call it. Clay, we all see what's going on here. And you're totally right, by the way. It undermines, because obviously there are brilliant black female jurists who could completely take this role, take this job. But why create this perception that they essentially got and affirmative action assistance in the process, right? It's because it's an explicit quid pro quo for Biden politically.
He's undercutting the legitimacy of his own pick by saying, I'm only going to consider people of this particular race and this particular gender. And I went to a fairly high-end law school. I graduated from Vanderbilt, you know, top 15, top 20 law school. And what I found interesting when I was there, Buck, and I graduated, what, 2004, so it's been over 20 years ago. But as I said yesterday, those affirmative action cases came down while I was a student at Vanderbilt Law School, is Vanderbilt Law School is an incredibly diverse place, such that when we would do our on-campus interviews, I remember a lot of the people that would interview, that's not surprising, high-end lawyers at that time, a lot of old white guys, right? They would come in, they had these little rooms, you would go in, and I remember there being conversations about, in those firms, they would say, oh, we need a lot more female attorneys. And what I found to be so interesting, and this is my generation, there were more women in my law school class at Vanderbilt than there were men. That was a seismic shift in terms of the legal profession. I believe that is consistent now across all of the legal profession, right? In terms of law schools, I think more women go to law school now than men, and women are graduating. I think we talked about this on the show a while back, Buck, at a rate around 60% of all college degrees now are being earned by women in the United States. Men have fallen down to around 40%. Those numbers are roughly accurate. What I'm getting at is the idea that you would have to establish a quota based on this generation, and I'm counting myself at 42 as a generation that would include people up to the ages of, you know, 52, 55, places like that where the Supreme Court era is being considered, is totally without merit to say you have to only pick someone based on their race and gender, because, as you said, there are many black women who are eminently qualified to sit on the Supreme Court. You are essentially saying that they aren't able to compete with other jurists when you say, I'm only going to pick a black woman. You're not allowing them to compete head-to-head with all the other people of different races and genders out there.
And this is what Clarence Thomas has referred to, including in his own autobiography. And Clarence Thomas refers to how the left actually undermines a lot of high-achieving minorities with their with their political pandering and with their desire to pat themselves, meaning white liberals, on the back for, oh, look at us, we're so good, we're pushing for more diversity and inclusion all the time. So that's one issue with this. And then also, in the context of how it's playing out in the courts, it is fascinating, by the way, because I do think you're going to have someone who was appointed for the with the explicit promise of their skin color must be a certain thing, their gender must be a certain thing, and then it's likely the Supreme Court will soon thereafter, by a 6-3 or maybe a 5-4 decision, say, you can't do that. That's actually unconstitutional. Beyond that, though, how do you explain? I mean, I went to a scholarship school here in New York City, Clay, where everybody wanted a full ride in high school. It's a unique place. Don't hate it because of Fauci, everybody. There's good things going on there nonetheless. And because he's an alumni, he's whatever. And the reality of the student body there was you had a lot of first-generation immigrants. And I just know because I had classmates who were brilliant, who were first generation Vietnamese immigrants, first generation. We had a lot of Korean immigrants. Why is it that when they're applying to colleges, their parents speak no English? They come here with nothing in their pocket. They're told you get lesser treatment by the Harvard admissions office than the son of the, you know, ambassador of Botswana to the United States, who gets chauffeured to school every day in a Rolls Royce. Like, how does that? That is the reality of the modern admission system. Because that individual, again, assuming we're talking about somebody who's black, that individual is given the equivalent of 200 or 300 points on the SAT. The Asian applicant, Asian American applicant, has about 150 point reduction. It's gross.
And we need to talk about this more in the context of the UNC and Harvard decision that's going to be before the Supreme Court. But again, the element here that I think is so wildly worthy of discussion is how much, and I don't know how much the left wing is even going to touch this, but how much Joe Biden is delegitimizing his own selection by already having said, I'm only going to consider 6% of the American population. When you say 94% of Americans, that's everyone who is not a black woman, is not eligible to be my nominee. How is it, Buck, that in any way this person, whoever they may be, is going to be given a fair shake here because a huge percentage of the American population is going to look at that selection and say, the only reason you were picked is because you're a black woman, because Joe Biden specifically said he would only pick a black woman. That's why quotas are so rejected under constitutional law, because of all the delegitimizing factors associated with quotas. And I got to say, John Roberts got this 100% right back in 2003 or four, whatever it was, when he said the way to stop discriminating on race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race.
I think it was Alito who had a line about, I don't think it was Scalia, but again, correct me, Clay, if I'm wrong on this one, that what we're talking about now is a racial entitlement state. The left has created that was a line from one of the Supreme Court justices in a decision on this matter. We have a racial entitlement state where some groups are given elevation at the expense of other groups because of what they, historical oppression or representation or whatever the case may be. That is flatly unconstitutional.
Not only that, to your point earlier, it also presumes that that person is not able to have success on their own. It undercuts the entire element of the meritocracy, and there are certainly many people who prove that the meritocracy works of all different races every single day. As I've said on this show for a long time, the highest earning people in America today are Asian men. If this were a fundamentally white supremacist country, that would be impossible. Contending with pain, no easy matter. There's no one solution that works for everyone. That's why there are aisles and aisles of remedies in drugstores. There's one product we're hearing a lot of great reviews on, though, and that's Relief Factor. Created by doctors, perfected over 15 years of scientific research, Relief Factor, 100% drug-free product made for you. Our friends at Relief Factor have developed a 3-week quick start. You take Relief Factor 3 times a day, breakfast, lunch, dinner. 3 weeks, you'll know if it works for you. Hundreds of thousands of people have tried. 70% of them have gone on to order more. 7 out of 10 people say it works for them. Why wouldn't you try out Relief Factor, Buck? How do you do it?
So easy. Join the more than 500,000 people and order the 3-week quick start for only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF to get the $19.95 3-week quick start developed for you. Again, go to relieffactor.com or call 800-4-RELIEF. Relief Factor, feel the difference.
several people that I talked to yesterday ultimately told me that yesterday was not the day for this announcement. Justice Breyer was not planning it. His emotions were described to me a lot of different ways. There was some consternation, but there was, you know, more surprise, I'm told from a lot of people, that, listen, he made this decision firmly some time ago. There was no change or pressure, he said, on him, that he had decided this was the right time for him at the age of 83, after decades on the bench, to step down. But he was not ready for the announcement yesterday, although we were told it is imminent. And he was, I'm told by one person, blindsided by what happened yesterday.
Blindsided by the libs. Welcome back to the Clay and Buck Show. They let it out. Usually a Supreme Court justice has the ability to make his own decisions about when he or she says that they're going to retire, but not in this instance, not in this case. You know, Clay, I don't think there's going to be a big fight over this. We talked about that a bit yesterday. I don't see how there will be a big fight over it as long as the person is, you know, basically qualified. As long as we don't have, honestly, a Harriet Meyer situation, which, you know, that was a Bush thing, everybody. That was not good. That was not a good moment for that administration, among some that were pretty challenging. This was interesting, though. Fox's own Geraldo yesterday, to go into the theory, Clay, that you've brought up about the big Kamala switch of roles.
I thought that Kamala Harris would be a great idea. It was the first name that jumped into my mind. She could be a terrific Supreme Court justice, an appointment for life. She's only in her 50s. She'd be there for 30 years.
You think she would be a good justice?
I think she'd be a terrific
justice. You thought she would be a good VP?
It's a role fit for her.
Clay, can we just put aside whether we think, I mean, obviously, I don't think she's meant for the Supreme Court in terms of her abilities as a jurist. I doubt you do. I won't speak for you. The politics of that, though, I think are much more fraught than it may seem at first. You're going to bail on the first female African-American vice president to make her a Supreme Court justice? I don't know about that.
She has to ask for it, right? I mean, and there's no suggestion. I mean, she was the Attorney General of California, but there's no suggestion that she has aspired for her entire life to sit on the Supreme Court bench. If she did ask for it and she made it clear that it was her choice, I think that that would be a decent choice for Joe Biden, because it would solve one of the issues he has right now, which is she is a drag on his overall administration, particularly if he's planning to run again. Whether or not that is, we don't really know for sure. I don't think we'll know till after the midterms, but she'd have to ask for it. And I don't think she's going to ask for it.
I also think she wants to have that, if she's not going to be president, post-VP, $150,000 speech, $5 million advance for a book nobody reads about her time as VP. She wants, you know, the Supreme Court, different ethical considerations. But anyway, we'll come back into the flights across the country with illegal migrants in a few moments here. You know, you don't just vote in November or every couple of years. You express your vote every single month by the companies you choose to spend your dollars with. That's why everyone should listen right now. You should consider your cell phone provider and who they're giving money to in politics. There's a solution. If you don't want your cell phone dollars going to leftist agendas, Pure Talk. Get your cell phone service from Pure Talk. They use the exact same towers, the same 5G network as one of the big three companies. It's a real upgrade with customer service, too. From your cell phone, dial #250 and say Pure Talk. You'll save an additional 50% off your first month. Again, that's dial #250, say Pure Talk. You can save up to 50% off your first month. Support a great American veteran-operated company that's not going to give dollars to the leftist agenda.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We've got a lot going on. Supreme Court going to be filled now that Justice Breyer is appearing here momentarily in the White House. But yesterday there was also a discussion about the way that illegal immigrants are being resettled and repatriated in some ways in the United States. And Jen Psaki was asked about that. We're about to talk with Miranda Devine, who had a fantastic article about that in the New York Post. But first, here was Jen Psaki being asked by Peter Doocy about that yesterday.
Why is the administration flying thousands of migrants from the border to Florida and New York in the middle of the night?
Well, I'm not sure that it's in the middle of the night, but let me tell you what's happening here.
2:13 a.m., 4:29 a.m.,
Well,
early in the morning.
Here we are talking about early flights. Earlier earlier than you might like to take a flight. It is our legal responsibility to safely care for unaccompanied children until they can be swiftly unified with a parent or a vetted sponsor. And that's something we take seriously. We have a right obligation to do that and deliver on that.
That was actually from October, and they tried to cash it as this is just people being reconnected with their families. Well, Miranda, you've had some video, you wrote an article. What is actually going on? What should people know about the Biden administration and what they're doing with these illegal immigrants?
Hi, Clay and Buck. Thanks for having me on. Look, last October, that was our story, the New York Post. We went out to White Plains Airport. We got a tip-off saying that there were these secret flights coming in at 2:30 in the morning, and that they were disgorging a whole bunch of illegal migrants who were then being bused around the tri-state area. So we followed a few of those buses. We watched some of these migrants being dumped at a rest stop on the New Jersey Turnpike, and then cars would come up and so-called sponsors or so-called family members would pick up these so-called children. We don't have their birth certificate. But looking at them, a big proportion of them, to my eyes and to my photographer's eyes, looked like adult males. The others, maybe, 16, 19-year-olds. So the federal government is basically orchestrating, under the nose of the American public, this mass movement, this mass transportation of illegal migrants from the southern border as fast as they can into unsuspecting communities all over the country. It's not just New York. It's California. It's Louisiana. We've traced on Flight Radar 24 a number of charter flights, these same aircraft, the same four or five charter companies that are making hundreds of millions of dollars from the taxpayer for doing this secret business. And what we have, what the new material that I have in my column today is a body cam footage, about an hour of it, from a Westchester County cop who was doing his job last August when these flights first started coming into Westchester. He went out there. He knew that the airport is supposed to be closed and under curfew from midnight, and he wanted to know why there was a plane, a Boeing 737 had landed, what all this activity was on the tarmac. He went out there and was completely astonished at what he found, and he was told by a dozen federal contractors who were there with the 142 migrants, illegal migrants that they'd brought in, that they weren't allowed to show their IDs to him. He asked for their IDs, and he said to them, well, I can stop you leaving this airport. I'm supposed to be in charge of security on this airport, and the TSA has certain rules about how many people are allowed onto the tarmac, and you're breaking them all. This goes against all our security rules. He got them to show him their IDs, and they told him where they were from. There were bus drivers there. They had all been sitting around waiting for about 6 hours, because this is such a shambolic operation that they didn't even call the bus drivers until over an hour after the plane had arrived at Westchester. This is going on every night. And it was only after our story in October ran that they stopped most of those flights coming into Westchester, I'm told. And it's only because Rob Astorino, who's the former Westchester County executive and a candidate for the governorship in New York, he's one of the only Republicans who cares about this. He got this footage, this body cam footage, from this Westchester cop under freedom of information, and he's provided it to me. And it is really damning. If you watch the entire video, you can see how the federal government is doing this in secrecy. They have federal contractors who have been sworn to secrecy. They have contractors in the bus companies who aren't even told their destinations until they're behind the wheel and ready to go. It is an absolute scandal, and it's disgraceful that the Republican Party isn't screaming blue murder about what the Democrats are doing.
Well, Miranda, we're trying to get the word out. We appreciate you bringing all this expertise and background to the conversation. We're speaking to Miranda Devine. She's the author of Laptop from Hell. I come from a CIA background, Miranda, so I have some idea of how the government secret world works. And when I'm reading all this and I see your reporting on it and all of this, what looks almost like cloak and dagger stuff. Oh, we won't show the IDs and we're not told, people involved in this aren't told where they're even going. What possible justification does the government have for this? I mean, this isn't the way, you know, this isn't the way that government operations in a whole range of other areas are conducted. So why aren't they saying, why aren't they telling people, oh, it's great, we're doing these fantastic migrant flights? I mean, what's the justification for the secrecy? Do we have any idea about that?
Well, it's interesting you asked that question, because that is the exact question that this valiant Westchester County police officer asked the federal contractors, and it's all recorded on his body cam video. And he says, you know, why? Do you know why the secrecy? What's the big secret? And the federal contractor, who's from this company called MVM Inc., which used to, quite a controversial company, which used to work for the federal government in Iraq, used to work for the CIA in Iraq. Now they're working for the federal government. They just signed a $136 million contract to transport illegal aliens around the country from the southern border. This federal contractor from MVM replies to the cop who is asking why the secrecy. He says, you know why. Look who's in office. That's why. Come on. And then he continues, you know why. Because if this gets out, the government is betraying the American people. Everyone involved in this clandestine operation knows that the reason for the secrecy is because Americans don't want this. They don't want their borders to be erased. No sovereign country can have its borders erased. You have Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and Anthony Blinken all jumping up and down about Ukraine's border, the sacrosanct Ukraine's sovereignty, and they're sending American soldiers over to Europe to protect Ukrainian sovereignty, Ukrainian's borders, while at the same time, they are actually facilitating the invasion across America's border. That is not hyperbole to say that. That is exactly what is happening. And that is why they are keeping it secret from the American people, because, of course, nobody wants their country to be invaded by illegal migrants. You're talking about last year, 2 million illegal migrants that the government is admitting came across the border. If it doesn't accelerate, which I'm sure it will, you're talking about 8 million by the time Joe Biden's out of office, minimum. That is another New York City. That is four Chicago's. That is something that does irrevocable harm to the country, and it is something that is aided and abetted by, it has to be said, Republican donors who want cheap labor. Maybe that is why the Republican Party is so silent on this matter, and only a few of our elected representatives on the Republican Party are actually speaking up about this, including Rob Astorino, who I have to say, you have to give him credit for getting this information and staying on it doggedly.
Miranda, fantastic stuff as always. Laptop from Hell is the book, and people can read your work at the New York Post. We will share this article from the Clay and Buck Twitter account as well. Thank you for making the time today.
Thanks so much, Clay and Buck.
We know you love freedom and want to defend it. So do our friends at Hillsdale College. College has been explaining, defending, and showcasing the brilliance of our Constitution for as long as anyone can remember. Hillsdale's known to be the best liberal arts college in America. Their mission at Hillsdale is to pursue truth and defend liberty. It's been that way since they established the school in the 1860s. It gives its undergraduate and graduate students the best education, and they're working to make the education available to all, from offering free online courses to help support great K-12 schools. Buck, Hillsdale's doing incredible work, and we can help our audience become aware of all the great content they're providing.
They actually have this amazing digest of liberty called Imprimis, Over 6 million households and businesses receive Imprimis for free each month. It's a great digest. It's short, it's concise, and includes words spoken in defense of our freedoms. And it's free, no strings attached. Generous donors who love freedom and this country make it possible for Hillsdale to send Imprimis to you for free. Sign up for free right now. Just go to this website, clayandbuckforhillsdale.com. That's clayandbuckforhillsdale.com. Welcome back into the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. Man, we've got a lot going on today. We're going to talk about Ukraine, and are people really pushing for U.S. military intervention in the event of a Russian invasion? Our friend Raheem Kassam from the National Pulse will be with us in the third hour of the program. We also have my friend Jenna Diabila, who just wants to fight for the kids all across America to be able to live normal lives in school. I would just note right now, you have two senior citizens on the screen of the news channels across America, Biden and Breyer. They're talking to the country at this point in time. And note that Breyer, of course, has an N95 mask on, because that's now, you know, that's the new cool thing. Got to have the N95. Biden, of course, has no mask on. And what does this mean? Does the virus say, hold on a second, you know, it's important. The president's important and he's speaking. So we're not. Look, no one should have to wear masks inside the Oval Office. No quadruple vaccinated or triple vaccinated person should feel like they have to wear masks, because we've done it. We've done all. I don't even care what people want to argue about what works, what doesn't work. We've done it. And we're also seeing the downsides. And, you know, this was from something we'll talk about tomorrow, is a piece in The Atlantic that that Clay has pointed out. We'll have one of the authors from The Case Against Masks in School. There's real downsides to all this. We've been warning you about this for a while. A lot of you know this already from your own children, their experiences. This is from a WPBF TV news report in early November. People are paying more attention to this now. Mask causing an over 300% increase, this speech therapist says, in speech delays among very young children.
We've seen a 364% increase in patient referrals of babies and toddlers from pediatricians and parents.
And they are children that are having a difficult time speaking.
Speech delayed.
Babies start learning how to speak by reading lips as young as 8 months. So what happens when lips and faces are covered up by masks? Well, therapists say for some kids, they can work around the mask and still learn to speak perfectly fine. But for others, it can cause speech delays.
There's no research out there yet to say that this could be causing speech and language delays, but most definitely it's, I'm sure, a factor. We're seeing a lot of things that look just like autism.
Clay, there are reports like this now all over the country. First of all, we know for a fact that remote learning causes enormous learning loss, particularly among children from financially underprivileged minority children from financially low income backgrounds. Okay, now we're talking about speech delays. This is near and dear to my heart, because not only do I want to help kids, obviously, but I had a speech impediment as a kid. This is horrible what they're doing to kids. For what?
It is, Buck. And I was reading this morning, Flint, Michigan is basically going to go to remote learning indefinitely. 80% of the kids in Flint, Michigan are minority, and no one is standing up for them. And I'll just say right now, I mentioned this yesterday, in Tennessee, if there are high levels of COVID infection among the teaching staff, they allow schools to take a couple of days to go remote. So my kids are on remote learning for Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of this week. And the amount of work that is required for a parent, I'm at home, for a parent to get a kid on, even if you have really good Wi-Fi in your house, even if you have a reliable laptop that they can use, and then you sit and just watch it, as I know many parents have, they're doing their best. And the idea that you could even call it remote learning is, to me, a fundamental repudiation of what's going on. And I've been saying this since they shut down schools in March of 2020 and then didn't follow the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations to come back in August and September of 20. A lot of kids were remote for most of that year, that this was and will be the biggest lasting impact in the generations ahead, is the kids, than what we have done to their education and how much we've cost them. And Buck, the kids that are going to bear the brunt of that cost are overwhelmingly public school kids of poor backgrounds who don't have reliable Wi-Fi at home, who don't have parents to get them on Wi-Fi. I mean, for a while there, I don't know what the latest numbers are, there were 1 million kids that were enrolled in school in March of 2020, Buck, that just disappeared. They didn't come back when they had another year of remote schooling. They weren't able to track them down. And we know what the significance is for kids who are unable to graduate from high school. Their entire lives, they're going to have much lower overall success rates. And we did this voluntarily to our kids. It's the biggest American public policy failure since Vietnam. I don't think there's any doubt.
School is obviously more, and all the educators, I know there are a lot of teachers who are listening to us right now, and I'm sure there are a lot of fantastic teachers listening to us right now. They all know it's more than just a lesson plan on a screen. I mean, there's a reason why you could right now go and have, there's all kinds of, you know, with Khan Academy and these different, and these online learning tools are great, by the way, if used as a supplement or used in a certain way for people who already, for example, have had substantial education. It can be great to further your education. I'm a big fan of the democratization of educational information out there. But there's a reason why people still want to go to high school, still want to go to four-year universities. I mean, you know, not everyone does, but people do choose to do this because it's about connection. It's about socialization. It is about the actual human interaction, the learning process. It is different over a screen. We all know that. And I also think, just Clay, this is a reminder. One, you know, Nancy Pelosi, when she announced, you know why she said she's running? Did you see this? I wanted to play this on the show. Maybe we'll get this for later. You know why she said she's running for Congress again? I'm not kidding. For the children. That is her answer. Democrats love to say they care so much about kids. When it comes to this pandemic, the Democrats have done more to harm children, to mandate child abuse, than at any time I would have thought possible in my lifetime.
And the kids who are most suffering are the youngest, to your point, Buck. When you think about the impact of not being in kindergarten and not being in first grade, that's different than not being a junior or senior in school when you can do a lot of the reading and studying on your own. The acclimatization, the culturalization of what school represents for those young kids, we've lost it. I don't think it's a surprise that the speech issues are up 300%.
We want to talk about maybe Ron DeSantis throwing some roundhouse kicks at the propaganda from the right house. Fly kick, maybe. Flying elbow. Want to get into it?
Let's do it.
Coming right back.
You're listening to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton on the EIB Network.